Jeff here. Thanks for listening. Go to playvolutionhq.com/ccbag or click the link in the show notes for the show's archives, ways to connect, ways to support the show, information about happy hour, and more. Early Learning Podcast. I'm Jeff Johnson coming to you from upstairs studio in the snuggery along the Gulf of Mexico. With me from the suburban paradise of Newcastle, New South Wales, Australia, Nicole Halton from Inspired EC. How you doing, Nicole?
G'day, mate.
G'day.
See, that's how it's done.
G'day, mate.
No, it's too lengthened or something. I don't know what it is.
You gotta do it quick. G'day, hey, mate.
G'day, mate. Yes, better. Yep, g'day, that's mate. It.
G'day, mate.
Yeah, you gotta be short and sharp.
Okay. Yeah, g'day, mate. G'day, mate.
Yeah.
Okay. So we get hey, I got a story to share. And it's months old. It happened just a couple of days after Christmas. I'm walking along the beach, and up the beach I notice a pile of something that wasn't on the beach the day before. And I get closer because I'm curious, and it's a stack of Christmas trees, just a mountain of Christmas trees, because apparently they've got a thing that I didn't know about last year, because last year was our first Christmas at the beach. People can bring their expired Christmas trees, not the artificial ones, the real ones.
Yeah,
down
no,
to
I gather.
Down to the beach, and then they do a bonfire over between Christmas and New Year's. This must have been the week after New Year's. So like the first week of January, this would have been. And I thought, oh, that's cool. Wish I would have known about that so I could actually watch all those trees burst into flame, because that would be cool. Put on the calendar for next year, but walked a little bit further down the beach, and something much more interesting was at play. There were three large pickup trucks, four-wheel drive vehicles, stuck axle deep in the sand.
Oh, fun.
Because they had been attempting to drop dead Christmas trees off on that pile and got themselves stuck in soft sand on the way to do it. Well, two of them had one pickup truck, some trees in the back stuck in the sand. A little bit further away from it, another truck with a big trailer stacked with trees stuck in the sand, but also stuck in between them, a police vehicle that came down to help and check the situation out, that also got stuck in the sand.
Great.
And all of these trucks had dudes around them. And I got to ask, what do you think their state of mind and demeanor was in this situation? It is a Saturday early afternoon, beautiful sunny day.
I don't know. Like, I think they'd be finding it all kind of funny, and I don't think anyone would be particularly stressed about it.
They were the best way I could describe it is at play.
Fantastic.
They were laughing and they were taking pictures, and one guy had apparently had some gear for these kind of occasions in the back of his truck, because he's already digging out. They're on their phones, they're calling in reinforcements to deal with the situation. And so I chatted with one guy and he's like, yeah, dumbass, it rained the other night and dumbass, I shouldn't have been this close to the shore. And so it's all on him. And so I walk up the beach another mile or so and turn around. And so I don't know, 20 minutes later, I'm coming back. More dudes, a cooler full of beer and sodas.
Yes, of course.
And I chatted.
Just having a great time.
Yeah, I mean, it ended up being a chance to play in the sand with their big four-wheel drive toys on a nice afternoon, and so it absolutely was these adults at play in this what could have been a lot. I mean, if it would have been pouring rain and they had to be somewhere and all that kind of stuff, it could have been a not good experience, but it was the perfect time and place to get your vehicle stuck and have to deal with
We have that happen a lot here because there's a lot of beach driving, a lot of beaches.
Sure.
So there's a lot of beach driving. So you often see, and like when I was a kid, we used to holiday at a place where there was a beach that was a drive-on beach. Pretty much the only way you could get to it was to drive on one end and you could get to the rest of it. And you know, there were multiple occasions that we used to stop and my dad had rescued people who'd become stuck and whatever. And it was always kind of playful unless the tide was coming in and they were a little bit too close to the ocean.
Sure.
And then it's like, okay, playfulness has stopped. And now we need to get your vehicle out. And I actually saw a video just a few days ago of a car floating out because the tide had come in. And I'm like, oh, I'm so glad that's not me. But I think that is, you know, it's that great example of that need for playfulness as adults. We don't get it enough. And then when something like that happens, you see that playful side come out in people. And I always find that so joyful to watch, you know, to see adults at play.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing I thought, because look, I'm cynical and this thought was, did they? Yeah. Yeah. It's true. I thought, did they do this on purpose? Because, if they've got a list of here's things I got to get done on Saturday, I got to drop these Christmas trees off and I got to go home and do the yard work. And then I've got to,
this could be more fun.
They call the wife and say, oh, honey, I'm sorry. I can't get to the list. I'm stuck in the sand. Damn, terrible. It happened. And then they've spent the next 2 hours, drinking beers and talking to the guys. So, I don't think it was intentional, but it very well could have been. And maybe next year, I've got it marked on my calendar to be watching next year. We'll find out if there's a repeat. Maybe it's an annual thing.
Maybe it could be. It's like we just gather and here we are. Done.
The Saturday after New Year's, time to get stuck at the beach.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So we're 7 minutes into the show. We might as well get into our topic. We're continuing our on and off series on the 8 sensory systems. Wanted to get into the vision system. I mean, look, it's important that it happens. I don't know. Last time we were talking about interoceptive, and that's, I think, my favorite. Next time we're going to get into proprioceptive. And I think I like that one. Vision. I mean, I'm glad I have it.
This is true. I don't know. It's pretty important. Like I, in my very comprehensive research, 10 minutes before we started recording, I was trying to kind of make sense of what it is about. Like I know what vision is. Like I think we all know what our vision is and that it does things for us and it helps. But until you really break down the complexity of it, the fact that, you know, your eyes and your optic nerve and your brain are all kind of working together and making sense of things that are input, you know, like they turn light input into meaningful visual information. Like that's kind of cool. You know, when you think about it like that, that's a pretty cool thing.
Yeah,
come on, that's cool.
Yeah. No. Okay. You've sold me. Okay. I'm pro vision now.
Okay. Great.
No, I think it, I mean, it is really important. And I think we do, we do take it for granted. And yes. I was thinking, you know, what do we talk about in this episode? And the thing that really got into my mind is that if we're interested in helping kids develop the visual system, one of the things we could maybe look at is exposing them to situations where they get to use their eyes differently, because a lot of kids spend their days in classroom sized rooms with fluorescent lighting, and that is what their eyes get used to, and that's their look. I mean, maybe it's okay because maybe they're going to grow up and work in an office cubicle, and it's just going to be a similar sized room and similar lighting. And so maybe I guess I was going to say that maybe we need to expose them to different light levels. maybe not, because they're going to spend their early years in classrooms, and they're going to go work in offices, and it's all going to be that. So maybe they don't need more things.
Say that about the offices. So we recently moved our Inspired EC office, and we went from an office that we loved, and where mine and Tasha's desks were in the office, we had these big windows, and our desks were at the windows, like right at the window, so you had lots of natural light coming in. You also had grass out the front, trees, and then beyond that was a valley. And then there were often birds flying in and out, and, you know, bush turkeys running past and all sorts of things. There was a wallaby one day. Like, there's lots of things happening, snakes. So lots of stuff happening out there. And so your eyes continually, even though we spend a lot of time on computers, you were able to kind of look up, look out, look at different things, get that different light input. We could have the lights off in the office because there was enough natural light coming in, so we didn't have fluorescent lighting or anything like that. We've moved into an office space, which is just a temporary home, but it's very much a traditional office space. The only windows that go to outside are frosted, so you can't actually see outside, and you get a little bit of a light glow, but you don't get light in. And so our desks now face walls, and there's no outdoor lighting. And we've actually spoken about it in the last few weeks, like how tiring it gets on your eyes, but also how, like, some of our staff have said they feel unwell at the end of the day. They don't feel good. And, you know, I think that's got a lot to do with it. That fact that you can't change up your vision and, you know, move away from, because, I mean, there's two key things that I wrote down in my very comprehensive notes beforehand. Was around the importance of outdoor play, and what was the other thing I wrote down? And around screen use, you know, and like those two things have such a big impact on like your vision. And we're sitting in an office where we're on screens and we've got no outdoors, and so that's having a really big impact on us.
Yeah, absolutely. And I got distracted because you said frosted window, and frosted window sounds delicious.
Because, different kind of frosting.
Yeah, frosted makes me start. It makes me start thinking, what kind of frosting is that? And then I got all hungry.
Opaque,
and
opaque windows.
I kind of had a sugar rush without even needing any sugar, and it sounds delicious, but in reality, it's kind of disappointing. Delicious. A frosted window is kind of disappointing in reality. So I guess it would be a good idea to expose kids to more than a typically sized and lit classroom. So being outside, the eyes work differently because there's more to see. Because
you there's more to see. There's things at different like depths. So there's that change in depth perception. You're not looking at just like a flat something, you know, like there's things in different places and doing different things. You're more able to use like your peripheral vision, and like that light reception is completely different. Like there's just so much that's better about being outside.
Yeah, just the fact that it's bigger, but it's also, I mean, there are more, I don't know, this is a thing, but the way I think about it is visual texture. There's just more, there are more textures to look at, because inside you're looking at flat walls and you're looking at furniture and you're looking at a lot of the same things. Outside, there's a lot more going on visually and in terms of color and surface texture and all that kind of stuff that you can see, that I think it's much more interesting for the eyes. But I think the other thing is our visual system is really tied to our body position and movement. And so also outside, what's happening is kids are moving their bodies in different ways instead of being sedentary. I mean, they're more likely to be moving.
Yeah.
But also putting their bodies in different positions. So they're looking at things askew. They're looking at things when they're hanging upside down, when they're rolling around, when they're hopping and jumping. And all of that is stimulating the visual system in different ways.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's funny you said about the color thing outside, and you think of, you know, a lot of traditional early childhood settings indoors are often quite colorful. You know, we'll throw like bright pink walls and, you know, yellow carpet and blue something else. And like we throw all these colors in thinking it's visual stimulation for children. And, you know, like we kind of have this logic, but it's a flawed logic. And, you know, it's like that's overstimulating for most children and most people. You know, that incredible amount of color that we often see in those settings can be too much for most people. Whereas you go outside, there's not many people, I think, that would spend time outside and go, oh, the colors, it's all too much. And yet, if you actually stop and look, like in nature, you will see the most vivid colors. It's just in the way that they're available to you and the way your eyes have to kind of track around and look for them rather than just being bombarded with a bright yellow wall.
Yeah. I was out or walking the dogs at sunrise this morning, and the tide was out, and so there's all these shallow tide pools, and I don't know. My favorite part of sunrise is about 20 minutes before the sun actually pokes up, because I think that's when the most interesting color is. Most of the time, just the horizon gets all these beautiful pinks and reds and everything. But these tide pools were purple for whatever reason on this particular sunrise, and there were so many different shades of this purplish, pinkish, bluishness that over the course of 20 minutes or a half an hour was just about constantly changing. And look, I suppose I could get the same effect inside with the screensaver on my computer.
No,
but
there's something different about nature.
In real life, it was probably a little bit better than even high def on my monitor. Yeah. I think
it is. And you know, like I think we've mentioned it every episode we've done on the sensory systems, but in her book Balanced and Barefoot, Angela Hanscom talks about the increase in myopia or short-sightedness in children. And you know, there's been a massive increase in, I don't know, the past couple of decades. And you know, a lot of the research suggests that's due to the limited time that children are now spending outdoors and the increased time that they're spending on screens and devices. And that goes for adults as well. You know, we're all doing it. We're spending more time inside and on a screen than we are actually out looking around, moving our eyes in different ways. Instead, your eyes, and you know, if you've been on a screen, by the time we finish recording, and we'll have recorded a couple of episodes, and I think I'm going straight into another Zoom meeting, and you know, like your eyes spend the whole time just focused here. Every now and then I glance outside and look at the trees and, you know, like try and train my eyes to do something else. But I know that when we finish, I'll be like, oh man, my eyes are so tired. You know, my eyes are sore.
I looked at Jeff for 90 minutes. My eyes need.
I've looked at Jeff for 90 minutes. I can't do it any longer.
Yeah. I mean, give the eyes. So it's like, so different settings, different light levels. Are all of those things like loose parts for the eyeballs?
I guess they are. They're all variables, aren't they?
Yeah, those are the variables in the environment. And so, I mean, get outside. If you're going to be inside, vary the light level. Having the lights off and playing with flashlights, torches, overhead projectors, LEDs, those kind of things can be a delightful experience. It's just that variety, because again, what the visual system is trying to do is it's working on, as it wires with the brain, it's working on, among other things, being able to differentiate between the things, different things it's looking at. And so giving the visual system a workout is really a pre-reading and pre-writing activity if you're very concerned about school readiness, because to be able to eventually sit and discriminate between all the different little squiggles on a page that mean, look, we've got these squiggles that are put into collections of squiggles that are put into bigger collections of squiggles. So we've got letters and words and sentences and paragraphs, and that's a lot of information for the visual system to decipher. And so just giving our visual system a workout makes that a little bit easier when it's time to start learning those things.
Yes, correct. Correct. But it is. It's, you know, we kind of worry about children knowing like the foundational stuff, but it's like before that, there's like the pre-foundational stuff, which is, you know, if your body can't do the things that it's supposed to do, it's not going to be able to read those things. Letters will not make sense. You know, it's like the English language is so complex to understand and to read and to look at. You know, why does that particular formation of lines translate to a thing? You know, and I find that all very interesting. But if we don't give children the opportunity to really strengthen that visual sense, then they're going to find that challenging.
Yeah. And beyond that, the visual system plays a big role in our social interactions as well, because we are constantly reading the body language of the people around us. I mean the phrase "read the room" is a thing. And so being able to read the changes in people's faces, for example, if you're engaged in rough and tumble play and your playmate has their play face on when you start, but then you push them a little bit harder than they were expecting to get pushed, and it starts switching over to "I want to eat you" face, and their eyes narrow and their face gets all scrunched up, and you see that, oh, hey, maybe I pushed him a little bit hard. I need to recalibrate this. I have become a student of reading Tasha's face and body language after 30 plus years. It is often visually based, because, you know, sometimes if she's not in a good mood, she walks loud. But that's not as noticeable as readily as her, the way she looks, the look in her face.
Don't piss me off, Jeff face.
Yeah, the Jeff pissed me off thing. Oh boy, I'm so aware of that. No, that's not true. I don't see it very often, because look, I'm a peach of a guy and easy to live with.
I can imagine.
Mm-hmm. Or she's very tolerant. But what were we talking about?
There is that. Yeah, I don't know. I think the visual sense, I think it is. It's that, you know, giving children different opportunities for, you know, honing that visual sense. I think different things to look at, you know, even just down to just changing small things within our environments, you know, even our indoor environments, small things that change that could, you know, kind of spark that little bit of curiosity and, oh, I see something different. What is it? I've got to go and have a closer look at that. Or, you know, like, as I say, outside is the place for me when it comes to developing this, but, you know, we can do it indoors.
We've talked in the past about how these systems are really interrelated, and our sense of vision is very closely tied with our sense of touch, especially when we are young little humans. When we look at things, we are drawn to touch them and manipulate
Touch them.
them as well. And so creating environments where kids can look and touch are probably those environments are probably more beneficial than having environments where we can look and not
Look
touch.
only. Yes. Yeah, good point.
I like to go to a museum now and again, but they've always got signs about, hey, don't
Don't
touch
touch this.
these things. And every time I see a sign that says don't touch,
You want to touch it more.
I really want to touch it more. So the sign should really say, hey, go ahead and touch these. And then everybody being like, oh, everybody's touched that. I don't want to touch that. But
Yeah, I don't want to do that now.
So there's that.
There's that.
Oh, there's this too.
Oh.
You mentioned overstimulation 8.5 minutes ago or something, and that stuck in my mind too, because one of the other kind of visual maybe problems, and we kind of touched on this with kind of all the bright colors and stuff that a lot of programs have, is that infants and toddlers especially are easily visually overstimulated. And so infants, when they get overstimulated, they tend to close their eyes and turn their heads and fall asleep.
Yeah.
And so for very young kids, having too much going on visually in the environment can be kind of detrimental. So it's about have kind of finding a balance there.
Yeah, it's funny actually. We were watching, we've got a fairly new niece, and my kids were watching her at Christmas, and she was laying under one of those kind of play gym things that has the stuff hanging off it and whatever, and all brightly colored as they tend to be. And so she was laying under that, and she's sort of, they were showing her different things because she kind of wasn't at the age yet of reaching for it or anything. And so they're showing her things, and they're all kind of there, and then it's making noise, there's music and stuff going on as well. And the next minute she went from happy and smiley to crying and asleep. And it was just like, she just literally went, oh no, this is all too much. And because the kids, as soon as she started to cry, the kids are like, what happened? She was so happy. I said, she's probably just overstimulated. I said, she's got way too much going on right now. She shut it down. She's gone, I can't look at this stuff anymore. I'm just done. And so here comes the tears, here goes the eyes, and I'm out.
I mean, that happens to me at least 3 times a day.
Still, yeah.
And I guess before we wrap up, magnifying glasses, microscopes, telescopes,
Binoculars.
binoculars. What are those things? Those things you
Well,
turn like
kaleidoscope.
kaleidoscopes, those things. But I turn my hands in front of my eyes, and
Those
Nicole knows what I'm
things,
talking
yeah.
about. Those things. So all that kind of thing, all those kind of things are kind of fun, different ways to play with the vision. Translucent pieces of plastic, the little plastic pieces that are the red and the blue ones, the little lensy things that you can
Yep.
change colors with, all that kind of stuff are opportunities. Eye
Even a really
patches.
cool thing I've seen years ago, eye patches. Yeah, eye patches are good. A cool thing I saw quite a few years ago was like a little frame, and it was made out of like cardboard or something and had like a hole in the middle. And like children could kind of hold it up, and as they looked through it, just kind of narrowed what they were looking at, so they couldn't see all the stuff around, and they sort of, could take it around outside and see different things through it. And it was just that change of perspective. I know even for me, when I take photos, if I take photos on my phone, it feels very different to when I take photos with my proper camera and I've got my eye up to the eyepiece. As soon as I've got my eye to the eyepiece, I feel like I'm really focused in on what I'm trying to take a photo of, and it's the only thing that I'm focused on. Whereas when you're holding a phone up, you kind of still see all the other stuff in the peripheral. So
Is
cameras,
there
real cameras.
a phone app that gives you that old camera feeling where you'd hold your
be cool. Maybe there is.
Hey, if I there's not, listeners, there's another idea.
There's another idea.
I just want my 5.5% run with the idea. That'd be a good app. I'm going to look for that when we're done. Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, that's another great loose part. Old cameras are great. We used to have them laying around in the playroom. They got used for, they got used as cameras and all kinds of other things. Usually laser blasters. They'd hold them over their eyes and shoot laser beams at people. There's another one, laser pointers. That's if you want another visual loose part, laser pointers are a fun one. I was serious about eye patches. You get yourself next Halloween, you collect after Halloween, you go to the costume shop and you buy a bunch of kid-sized eye patches that they can put on and play with. That's a fun way to give your visual system a bit of a different kind of workout. You look like we're done.
I'm here for that.
Hey!
I think I keep freezing.
This here has been the Child Care Bar and Grill podcast, the world's longest running and most prolific early learning codcast. But it's not a codcast, it's a podcast. Most prolific early learning podcast. That... thinks you're glad this is an audio podcast instead of a video podcast, because then yes. Your visual systems would have to look at us talking about this stuff, and who wants to do that? thanks for listening. Back soon. Bye-bye.
No.
Yeah, this doesn't need to be a video cast. Nobody would want to.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.